Hello and welcome to Season of the Witch with Rowan Oaken, the show where we spill the tea on the occult and read the leaves to filth. I'm your host Rowan, and in this week's episode we have part two of our Midnight Society special, Straw Man. How exciting! I'm doing something a little bit different for myself tonight. So I have a candle ready on my table. What have we got? We have a pumpkin. It just says pumpkin. Doesn't say pumpkin spice. Just says pumpkin over from TK Maxx, which is TJ Maxx over in the US. So it's like ASMR. I light our candle and it has harvest pumpkin interwoven with notes of vanilla, cinnamon and sweet brown sugar. Sounds delicious. Sounds delightful. I'll let you know. And I'm not filming anything. I'm recording in the evening today, and I am joined by a beer this evening. How exciting. From the Loch Lomond Brewery, which I've never had before. I've been to Loch Lomond. Absolutely gorgeous. I've hiked along Loch Lomond. I've never heard of their beer company before. A beautiful can, but this is not a fucking sponsor. What am I doing? I'm just looking at a can, just being excited by it. Really nice colours. So I'll let you know how that is. Oh, ASMR moment now. What has this turned into? Loch Lomond Brewery, if you want to sponsor the show, if you want to be, you know, a Midnight Society special sponsor, then by all means do. Oh, she tastes good. She tastes real good. Really nice. Really, it's kind of malty and definitely fruity if you are into that kind of thing. You're into fruity things. So if you're here, you're probably here because you've already watched part one of the Midnight Society special, Tale of Straw Man. And in that episode, I explained that this is a first foray into our Midnight Society specials, where I will be splitting this story up into small parts to read and go through, which is very exciting. It's exciting for me. Thank you so much for all of the feedback that you've been giving over online, over on Instagram. It's been really nice getting to hear how excited you are about this too. So as a bit of a recap from last episode, we followed Amir and his journey into the eerie town of Fairfield. His drive into the town is filled with reflections on his strained relationship with his family and his struggles with his identity and career. When a car accident throws him face to face with a gruesome discovery, a body stuffed in a scarecrow, it marks the beginning of a chilling experience in Fairfield. As he limps into town seeking help, he encounters its peculiar residents and the over-friendly mayor, Mr. Blackwater, who introduces a sinister undertone to the town's seemingly quaint atmosphere. Amir's attempt to uncover the town's dark secrets quickly become a matter of personal survival as he realizes that Fairfield is a place of hidden horrors and that he may have just walked into a trap. The silver pools of Blackwater's eyes flickered with panic. Amir was sure it was guilt. "Who's up there?" questioned Amir. Blackwater, eyes flitting about the ceiling, ignored Amir and with haste began walking toward the door. "Maya!" Rising from his feet, Amir crept behind Blackwater and grabbed the poker from the fire. The scraping sound alerted Blackwater, who turned to see Amir stood trembling, the poker shaking like an animal's tail in the air. The expression on Blackwater's face had once again changed. Fear. A raw, unspoken horror intense in his eyes. He swallowed hard as if digesting fistfuls of sand and lurched for the poker, snatching it clean from Amir's hand. "At sunrise, there will be a truck waiting to seize you and your vehicle. They're going to take you out west to the nearest town. Take my offer and leave."
"I'm not leaving."
Blackwater edged nearer, the poker heavy under Amir's neck. You will leave at sunrise.
I can't leave.
The poker pushed harder on Amir's windpipe, making the air rattle in his throat.
Who is up there?
Blackwater tried to retain his wavering focus, but the muffled cries begged for his attention, and his gaze flitted up towards the ceiling. Cried the mucus, garbled voice of a woman. With gritted teeth that squeaked in his jaws, Blackwater turned back to Amir, poker still firmly pressed upon his neck. Screamed the voice, led by a spluttering sound. Tightening his grip on the hilt of the weapon, Blackwater released it from Amir's neck and made his way up the creaking wooden stairs. Amir, in his solitude, released the tremendous breath he had been holding, releasing all of his pent-up fears. He was left with the sound of the crackling fire as he whispered to himself over and over again, "Oh shit. Oh Jesus. Oh crap." He looked at the door, the way out. He knew he should run. He knew he should get the absolute hell out of this place. The research grant wasn't worth what was going on here, and he was sure he couldn't trust Blackwater to get his car back on the road. But he couldn't stop himself. He couldn't quite command his feet to stop walking up those creaking stairs after Blackwater. The grandeur of the homes seemed to fade into dark, mottled hues. Lit in the blue moonlight, it almost looked as though it could be underwater. Walls felt wet, as if they'd been mourning all day. On the upstairs landing, the silhouette of Blackwater loomed, lifting a lifeless body under the arms. A dragging and sliding noise, the soft repeat of "Please, stop, stop it, please, I can't." Amir peered through the narrow door's crack and caught a glimpse inside. A blood-stained nightgown. Ratty, wet hair, limbs hanging low. A bassinet glowed in the fire-lit room as Blackwater pulled the hair from the woman's sweaty face. She reeled in pain, her face a portrait of agony as she lay outstretched upon her bed, as if she had fallen from a great height.
"I know it hurts, my love. Believe me, this hurts no one more than me right now. But it will all be over by tomorrow."
The woman's head lulled to the side as whatever was causing the pain subsided. Blackwater leaned in and kissed her forehead. As he walked to the door, he was stopped by her cracking voice.
"Avi."
"Yes?"
"I don't want to do this anymore. I think it's killing me."
Slowly turning back to her, he gently caressed her hair and stroked her cheek with a ghost-like wave. Hand stretched out, he placed it over her dry lips, over her nose, and held tight. Widened eyes, she began to kick. Her engorged pupils caught Amir's, who was still stood watching in the doorway. The muffled sound of help crying beneath Blackwater's firm grip. The muffled cries followed him all the way down the stairs, and he was sure he could still hear them. The sounds of her being strangled over Blackwater's screams that bellowed, "I will cut him from your belly!" Amir had been running for 10 minutes, sprinting back toward the dirt track road. He was sure he had been followed at every turn. The sprint made every part of his body hurt as he sucked in cold winter air through his teeth, stinging them with each breath. His cowardice made his stomach hurt in agony, and he knew he needed to go back. He needed to save the woman, to save Maya, but he needed help. He wasn't worth much with one good arm. And he pulled a cigarette from his pocket and lit it as he looked back on the town, the scarecrows looking at him in his transgression. Smoking was not allowed in Fairfield.
You're going to get a week's worth of yolking for something like that.
The noise jolted Amir, reawakening his senses that were calmed by the nicotine, with a serene confidence that looked as though he had witnessed the birth and the death of many worlds. Ethan stood holding a book in his hand and steaming cup of coffee in the other. His clothing was a hint of bohemian flair, the scarf about his neck so nonchalantly draped, and his tweed vest. His movements are thoughtful, almost dance-like, as he made his way to Amir.
Hell, I know it's pretty late and all, but you're welcome to come to the library for coffee.
Library? Gesturing with his cup, Ethan pointed to the beaten-up bookmobile parked off the curb of the road.
See, I was doing my weekend in Fairfield for work when I got myself a flat out here, and, well, I was going to spend a night on walking in the morning.
Amir's expression was tinged with suspicion, a shadow of concern flickering in his eyes as he took a long, contemplative drag on his cigarette.
Hell, you ain't from round here, ain't you?
The cigarette gave it away.
Not just that. You're about the only person that ain't white in the near 10 years I've been doing this job was bringing you to Fairfield.
You the car I saw? Amir gave a silent, affirmative tilt of his head. I hit something. It was one of those. Pointing with the cigarette in his hand, Amir signaled toward the scarecrows who were watching the conversation.
That's a straw man.
But inside it, there was a...
You ain't hear the straw man fallacy?
Amir's pause was signal for Ethan to continue.
They take your words, twist them up real good, and claim a victory over you or something that you ain't even never said or did.
They build up a scarecrow, all stuffed up with lies,
misunderstandings, and then knock it down feeling all high and mighty.
But it's just straw. No substance.
No victory in battling phantoms.
This one... It wasn't stuffed with straw.
Hey, what are you talking about?
There was a body. A body in the scarecrow. Can you show me? Amir guided Ethan to his battered car, crumpled at the bonnet, a decrepit hunk of metal perched haphazardly at the roadside. As they approached the car, Amir's face grew taut, and his hand reached hesitantly to the scarecrow still outstretched on the car, its fabric and straw hat half concealing the nightmarish truth. Ethan recoiled in visceral horror, almost dropping the now cold coffee in his hand. There, enscorned amid the straw, lay the rotting body, twisted into grotesque contortions. It hadn't been a dream.
Oh, shit. You really ain't joking.
You think these other... And he looked to the line of scarecrows. You think they are all like this too?
You think we should check?
And you see, I reckon we ought to get them good Lord's graces out of here.
On foot?
Well, I got me a car phone in the bus. I say we dial up someone.
Like the police?
Like the police, the papers, and anyone else needs to hightail the fuck over here. It's my car. They're gonna think I did it.
And stuff him sad a scarecrow as an alibi? You're pretty fresh off the farm.
There's something else as well.
Another body?
No. In the town, the mayor, Blackwater.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty well acquainted.
There was a woman... His wife, maybe. She's in trouble. She might even be... I saw him... Say no more. I know the shady son of a prick you're mentioning. The night clung to them, a shadowy shroud, as Amir and Ethan began their walk back to the bookmobile. Moonlight cast skeletal shadows over the dirt track, the chill of the air, making Amir's broken bone sear in more agony. Each step they took was met with a soft, unsettling crunch under dead leaves and dry dirt. The scarecrows in the field loomed like silent watchmen, their grotesque forms appearing even more menacing in the dim moonlight. Their hollow eyes and twisted limbs watched the two men's every move, and one's head even seemed to move as a crow perched upon its hat. Emir and Ethan exchanged only occasional whispers, their voices subdued by a sense of foreboding that hung in the air. As they walked, the world around them seemed to blur and distort, as if they had crossed into a realm where reality and nightmare merged. The mobile library's flickering lantern beckoned them like a solitary beacon in the darkness, a refuge from the terrors of the night. Their fingers brushed as they walked, a gesture that conveyed both comfort and trepidation. Ethan observed Emir for a brief instant, not wanting to look too long. His rugged jawline adorned with a wild beard, his features etched with a mixture of concern and curiosity. Thick, tousled, unwashed hair, with a good shower he could easily be seen as handsome. Emir caught the eyes of Ethan, who quickly interjected to fill the awkwardness. "Your arm there, it don't look too good."
"Yeah, I think I broke it."
"And you're shivering.
It's cold."
They stopped, standing outside the mobile library, its exterior adorned with faded murals of classic literary scenes painted in muted colors that had seen better days. The rusty metal frame, worn from years of service, gave the vehicle a distinct vintage charm. Its boxy shape provided ample room for rows of wooden bookshelves, their edges softened by decades of handling. Dust jackets showed signs of wear and tear from countless readers, a sweet scent of aging paper, and well-loved novels permeated the interior, mixed well with the scent of a burning wood stove. It was the first thing Emir noticed as he stepped in.
You never worried this is just gonna go up in flames?"
"Folks around these parts, they burn enough books. This little library here wouldn't be a splash in the ocean."
"You live here?"
"365 days of the year, you know. She was due for a scrap hitch back out in Emerson. She were filled with over 200 books, all banned out in the state. It was like someone had been collecting. Any on my mind, The Color Purple, The Grapes of Wrath, Catching the Rye, To Kill a Mockingbird, Slaughterhouse 5, and more." Taking a handmade cup from a cupboard that barely aligned to the hinges, Ethan poured the thick, dark coffee out for two and handed a cup to Emir. "You want me to take a look at your arm there?"
"If I'm honest, I'd rather you just... if you could just make the phone call first.
You ain't one for waiting around." Ethan waited, perhaps waiting for Emir to change his mind, which he didn't waver from.
"Man, we'll make the call. You wait here."
Shuffling through the narrow cab, Ethan made his way to the front of the bus and started up the engine. A splutter, a kick, and a rattle. It started and filled the air with the scent of cheap fuel. Emir tried to listen to the conversation over the loud engine. "Flat tires, a body on the road, someone from out of town, yep, How soon can you get here? Okay, well, no, we're safe. Just before the water tower, before the sign to Fairfield, yep, okay, thank you." And he hung up the call and returned back to Emir, the choking of the engine falling back into the silence of the cracking fire.
"They're coming. Not until sunrise, but they're coming."
"Until sunrise?"
"Hey there, this is the country. Police department's just three guys and a pea shooter among them. Guy said he'd call up a buddy and head over pronto. But you understand, it's a good piece of road out there. We'll just bide our time until he shows."
Amir seemed appeased somewhat and took a sip of the scalding coffee, trying hard to hide the pain on his lips. So, how about I take a gander at that arm of yours now? Placing his cup on a small table, Amir extended his injured arm, an inadvertent tremor coursing through his fingers, the pain persistent, a relentless echo of the night's horrors. In the amber glow of the library, Ethan's presence offered a strange solace, a soft refuge from the chilling unknown. Ethan's hands, both graceful and gentle, embarked on their meticulous exploration of Amir's arm, fingers tracing the delicate curves of his forearm. Each touch sent ripples through the tense silence, an unspoken connection that hung between them, an ephemeral threat. The library seemed to pulse with a newfound energy, as if it too was privy to the unspoken tension in the room. A break. I reckon it's along the ulnar. That bone in your forearm? Ethan spoke, his voice a mere whisper. Amir let out a breath he hadn't realized he was holding, and Ethan offered a consoling smile. It ain't too bad. I've seen breaks like it before. Wow. Ethan's expression shifted. He wished he hadn't mentioned it. Well, my folks, they ran a funeral home, and well, you'd get plenty of people with ulnar fractures where their arm is braced against the wheel on impact. We'd often have to break parts and put them back together again, you know? And then you became a librarian. I won't rightly call myself no librarian, but you do live in a library. Exactly. That's about more right. I get paid to motor the bookmobile around town to town, especially them rural ones. I reckon it makes me more of a Roman keeper of stories. Like those ones there? Amir murmured, pointing to the shelf of books he'd heard white women screaming about on the TV. Well, you know, some folks can get a bit jittery about certain books, calling them dangerous or whatnot. Fear about what a book might do, but it ain't always grounded in reality. As he spoke, Ethan fashioned a makeshift splint with dexterity that Amir found himself captivated by. The connection between them felt palpable, as if their souls had collided in the midst of a night fraught with enigmatic horrors. See, reading can be like a garden. It's got all these sorts of flowers and weeds. And just cause you find a weed, it don't mean you gotta burn the whole garden. I reckon some folks fear what they don't rightly understand. And that can lead to missing out on some powerful stories. Hell, what even is a weed except for a plant you don't reckon belongs in your garden? Am I right? Amir thought of his mother, the shame on her face at family functions. He was their weed in their beautiful garden. And the look in Ethan's eyes seemed to know this. Are you not worried that they're going to find out? Find out what, my friend? The books. Are you not worried they're going to find out about the books? The books ain't for me anyhow. The books find the right person when they need them the most. Like I say, I ain't much of a librarian, but always fancy myself an illustrator. Look at this. Come on. Pulling out a drawer from under his seat, Ethan took out handfuls of book covers and passed them to Amir. The decoy cover, Carousel Dreams, was an artful ruse showing a vintage carousel with vivid hand-painted horses center stage against a dream-like surreal backdrop. The scene was imbued with a sense of whimsy and nostalgia, evoking memories of carefree childhood days spent beneath the spinning carnival lights. The title, Carousel Dreams, rendered in playful cursive font, Hidden within this seemingly innocuous design were the discreetly painted initials J.D. On one of the horses, as it held its head back, open-mouthed and wild, a young boy in a red hunting hat smiled at the reader. The Catcher in the Rye. You painted this?
I did.
You've got a real talent, it's an actual talent. This is amazing. And Ethan drew nearer, his finger tracing the secrets painted onto the page. His warm breath brushed against Amir's hands, a touch that sent a shiver through their veins. Through the night, they spoke about books, jobs, their families, and the absurdities of the world. Coffee gave way to whiskey, and laughter resonated in the room, drowning out the night's earlier terrors. But then, talk of current affairs broached the topic of recent news. The growing AIDS epidemic, and the room fell into a silence so intense, smothering their words. Unconsciously, the two slowly moved away from one another. Amir's thoughts drifted to his ex-boyfriend, his wraith-like body in bed the day he left him. His viral load soared and his body surrendered to the relentless onslaught of the disease. And as Amir conjured the image of that room, of the man with whom he had shared wild nights and secrets, his eyes brimmed with heavy tears. Their relationship had been in its infancy when the truth emerged. They'd taken precautions. Every member of Amir's family was a doctor, the kind who knew enough to scare Amir, but for Amir, the thought of caring for someone in such dire circumstances felt like an insurmountable burden. He'd convinced himself that his presence in Fairfield was solely for research, but deep down, he knew he had sought refuge in flight, running from the guilt that had clung to him ever since he abandoned Andy in his apartment. The two wrestling thoughts of the woman, Maya, in her bed, screaming for help, Andy reaching out to touch Amir's hand one last time. He was a coward. The weight of unspoken regrets and unfulfilled love settled in the room, casting a gloom over the embers of the dwindling fire. In that moment, Amir and Ethan shared more than just stories and secrets. They shared the scars of their past and the burdens of their choices. It was the first time Amir had ever been honest with anyone other than the guy at the sexual health clinic. Talking to Ethan was as natural as breathing, as if words flowed effortlessly and unbridled. HIV, AIDS, it's not just a disease. It's this country's way of silently attacking gay men from the inside out. I'm pretty fucking confident if this was any other fucking disease, one that got every white straight man in America, they'd have vaccinations, people lining up to take them one shot after a goddamn other. They'd have the best money in the world poured into it so people could be up on a pedestal as the man who saved the world from AIDS. But it's not. It's even shameful to help. Maybe I was ashamed to help. I was scared. Scared of seeing who I could become. Ethan took Amir's hand, the electricity of his touch lighting Amir's stomach with nervousness. You were just scared. And truth be told, a lot of folks are. But you? Now
would strike me as someone who's ashamed. Not one bit. Fear's what sometimes leads folks to ban books. To shun certain folks and notions from their spaces. It's all right to feel fear. It's what you make of it that matters. Now some folks run away from it. Some use it to stir up a mob and find something to hate. And then there are those who reckon it's worth a look inside themselves to question if maybe what's lurking. Maybe what's lurking within is what they are to be afraid of, rather than what's outside. The last of Ethan's words were so close to Amir's lips, he could almost taste them. "We should sleep," Ethan whispered. Staggering over his response, Amir faltered. I never asked you. He hesitated, the words caught in his throat, his eyes darting fleetingly to Ethan's mouth, a subtle glance of uncertainty. He asked me what? If you're... Amir began, only to be cut off by Ethan's swift response. I'm not. His words hanging in the air, causing Amir to momentarily retreat. But there was a sly, mischievous smirk tugging at the corner of Ethan's lips, mirrored by a knowing one on Amir's, which he offered back. With swift grace, Ethan rose from his seat, setting in motion a series of actions that transformed the library's interior. He deftly assembled a double bed, concealed ingeniously beneath a compact desk below a wall of dusty books. The cushions from the seats that had listened to their evening's conversations were repurposed, and in no time, a makeshift bed materialized, almost disappearing into the dim glow of the fading fire. Amir, his movements clumsy as he tried to accommodate his broken arm, clambered onto the newly created bed. Meanwhile, Ethan grabbed a pillow and a blanket, tossing them onto the floor, and he began to undress. You don't have to do that, Amir protested, his voice reflecting his concern. This is your place. You really shouldn't be sleeping on the floor. Pausing in his undressing, Ethan looked up at Amir. Across his chest, a large, deep scar lay in faded white. Amir moved to lower himself to the floor. But before he could, Ethan unfolded himself onto the bed, pulling the discarded pillow from the floor to rest behind his head. He met Amir's eyes, his hand gently reaching out and softly touching Amir's. "I am," Ethan said simply, his hand warm and reassuring on Amir's. Day broke over Fairfield with a lingering mist that draped itself over the cornfields, turning it into an ethereal seascape. From a distance, the park library van stood like a shadow-like apparition, its windows veiled in condensation. Amir, shirtless and disheveled, stood outside smoking a cigarette, the plumes of smoke billowing in the chilly morning. Amir grappled with obscure reality, the isolation in the belly of nowhere, the night spent sleeping in the library, the looming concern of a potential murder he had witnessed and his involvement in a so-called hit and run. Yet despite it all, a newfound sense of courage stirred within him. There was no desire to run. Not with Ethan around. Just a calm resolve he hadn't felt before. There was an unfamiliar comfort in the tranquil morning, a silent belief that everything might just turn out okay. Tossing the cigarette onto the dirt track, Amir exhaled a final plume of smoke into the morning sky, watching as it dispersed and dissolved into droplets of fog. With eager steps, he turned away from the eerie serenity outside and re-entered the library. The air had a morning dampness that was intertwined with the warm, lingering scent of whiskey-laden breath and the faint traces of unwashed bodies.
His rucksack awaited by the table, a silent witness to the evening. Amir rifled through it in search of his toothbrush, his fingers fumbling in haste. In his clumsiness, the bag tumbled to the floor, spilling its contents in disarray. Ethan, in the midst of a deep slumber, remained undisturbed. As Amir crouched to retrieve his belongings, he spotted a concealed drawer tucked away in the walls of the van. Curiosity ignited within him, urging him to explore further, anticipating more of Ethan's book cover decoy paintings. Opening with quiet, prying eyes, he uncovered what was hidden within that compartment. It was something, instead, that was profoundly unsettling. Nestled among the items lay a meticulously preserved clipping from a journal. A journal Amir had co-authored 3 years prior, a bound copy of his thesis, and an assortment of photographs. Photographs of Amir captured in candid moments, some from university publications, and others he'd never seen before. An electric tension charged the air, transforming the library, once a refuge, into a chamber of unease. Amir turned to face Ethan, who lay in bed, his eyes now wide open and fixed squarely upon him. Amir was unsure of how long he'd been watching. A resounding, insistent knocking pierced the library quietude, jolting Amir and Ethan from the disconcerting revelation.
Hi, this is Bill from Fairfield Recovery.
A voice called from the other side of the door.
We found the vehicle you reported.
Ethan and Amir exchanged a wordless, knowing look, the photographs still trembling in Amir's grasp.
I'm wondering if you can help us out. We're looking for a man. He goes by the name of Amir. The mayor's looking for him.
And there we have it. Part two of Straw Man, our Midnight Society special. Thank you for joining me in our next part of the story. Part of me just wishes you could just read it, because I don't know why, for the life of me, I decided that Ethan would have that accent, and I'm so sorry. I apologize on behalf not just the South of America, not as in South America, but the southern part of North America. That seems confusing to say that, but also on behalf of all North Americans for what I did then. Let's lean into it though. Let's lean into that storytelling. Maybe more people need to have voices. Now, I used to work in a school. One of my favorite things to do was to read stories. I've always loved reading stories, especially if I can give it some good gusto. And I used to love playing around with dumb accents, and it was fun when you did it with kids. But maybe it's like you shouldn't do it when you're doing it on a podcast. Let me know if you want me to stop doing it moving forward. If you think it's far too distracting for the story, please. Feedback is welcome. Other feedback, the pumpkin candle, it's pretty decent. I'd give it like a solid 6 out of 10. You know, it's getting to the point now where it smells quite waxy, and I feel like it's not smelling too pumpkin-y. Talking of the Loch Lomond Brewery, the beer, I'd give that a real good 8 out of 10. It was tasty. It was good. It was malty. It was passion fruity. It was peachy. It was citrusy. Nice. Well, I do hope I haven't scared anyone away from our Midnight Society episodes. I do hope you join us for part three. Let me know over on Instagram and Facebook at SOTW with Rowan what you thought of this episode. If you thought it was the worst thing you've ever heard in terms of the accent, I'm absolutely open to that honest feedback. I'm so sorry. It's so stupid. As soon as I did it, I was like, no going back now. Not what you've done. You've written the character this way. It's funny because it's clearly set in America, and I was like, this is what I want this character to be like and how they want to talk. But then I really didn't think about the fact that I have to talk in that way. How stupid is that? So do give me some feedback, and I hope you are all doing absolutely fabulous, and I'm sure you will stay witchy, bitchy, sassy, and classy. You've been listening to Season of the Witch. I've been your host, Rowan Oaken, and this has been flipping fabulous. Take care, everyone.